What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
The Burt Show.
Hey, two stories that caught my eye this morning that we haven't got to yet. One is that weird story in Vidalia.
Yeah, it has to do with two men, one heart, and one wife. It actually started, you know, several decades ago when a guy named Terry Cottle married a wife named Cheryl, and this was in South Carolina. So then Terry, unfortunately, 12 years ago, committed suicide by a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Well, Cheryl donated his organs, and there was a man named Sonny Graham who received his heart. So Sonny was so thankful that he had received this heart and a second chance at life, so he contacted Cheryl to thank her for this. And over the course of time, it is about 9 years, they kept in touch, became friends, got to know each other, and then fell in love and then ended up getting married. So Sonny not only had her ex-husband's heart, but, I mean, had her. Cheryl was his new wife. Well, it was last week, and this is where, you know, like Bert said, this is Vidalia, Georgia, is where they lived, and it was last week when he killed himself from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, just like Terry did 12 years ago.
Bizarre. So just who does bizarre. The heart go to now?
Just keep passing it forward. Pay it forward.
Yeah, pay it forward.
Somebody
needs a new husband, right?
Yeah, somebody needs to ask better stay away from that woman. Like that, if I'm the transplant doctor and they can move that heart one more time, I'm like, here's the rule.
Right.
Yeah. You cannot take this woman.
Just to expand on it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like I was reading yesterday that he just needed to get to know the family that gave him this new lease on life. So he went to go visit her. Mm-hmm. And he said the first time he saw her, he could not stop staring at her. He instantly felt this connection to her in a couple of different ways. So they kept in touch with each other, and then he bought her and her children a home. He felt so indebted, and he's like, you know what? I got to do something more than this. So he bought them the home, and then the relationship developed from there. They fell in love or whatever, mm-hmm. and then he ended up killing himself the same way the first husband did.
That is bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a made-for-TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story this morning about Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney's first wife, Linda, didn't know her breast cancer was so advanced when she died. He kept it from her.
I saw that.
All right, let me read the story, because this is this would be a real struggle, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, do you tell your spouse or the person that you love just how bad their case is and let them deal with it their own way, or do you keep that to yourself? And that's exactly what he did. Paul McCartney decided, you know what, I'm not going to tell. I'm just not going to. Linda was diagnosed with the illness in 1995, and she underwent chemotherapy, but the treatment failed and Linda's hair started to grow back. He just decided at that point not to burden his wife with the full seriousness of the cancer diagnosis. so she could live her life as she pleased. This is what he says, and he said to the Sunday Times, at the time she knew she was ill, but she'd had chemo and her hair was growing back. I'm not actually sure she ever knew she was dying. You have a decision to make as a family as to whether you tell someone, and the doctors leave it to you, the immediate family.
Mm-hmm. So they told Paul, but not her.
Right. He continues to say, I talked it over with the doctors, and he said, I don't think she would want to know. She's such a strong, forward-thinking lady and such a positive girl, and I don't think it would do any good. So she passed away on April 17th in 1998 at age 56, and Paul says she never really knew how bad it had progressed. So if this is your family and your loved one, mm-hmm. and I guess we could run this anywhere. We could run it with your wife. We could run it with, I don't know, it could be brother, could be parents. But do you tell them if you have the knowledge? What do you give to yourself?
At first reaction was, if you know you care about them and you want to make sure that they are happy or whatever, but I do think it is doing them a disservice by not telling them. Because having witnessed someone who passed away from an illness, it gives them the opportunity to say any final words they want, mm-hmm. to put closure onto things. So I think that to rob someone of that, you know, and then, like, for instance, let's say, I mean, if she's sick, she feels sick, so it could be that she may have had confusion of, well, they don't say I'm sick, but I still just can't, mm-hmm. I don't have the energy, I don't understand. Where I do think that if you know what's going on in your own body, that I think that you leave it to that person to handle it as they should.
I agree with you on the whole, on the closure issue. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if I found out tomorrow I was going to pass away, there's probably a whole bunch of fences I want mended before I take off. Plus, I think your attitude does change. Mm-hmm. You know? No offense, I don't want to come into work.
Right.
I probably want to take that time and hang out with my family more and travel and all. And so I think my life does change a lot.
A lot, yeah.
If I have that information.
Absolutely.
So I think I'd want to make that myself. I would want Stacey to tell me.
Well, I think it also depends on I don't think you can decide as a generality.
I'm just asking for you. Would you want to know or not?
Depends on the situation. Do I have any fight left in me? Or have I just given up and I'm ready to go?
Let's use the palm. Well, if we're using the Paul McCartney model, then she wasn't just ready to go.
She had
some life left in her, obviously.
Then don't tell me.
Don't tell you.
Yep.
I kind of feel the same way. If I'm still ready to fight it, then don't tell me.
I'm trying to think of the other angle on it. Hey, Alyssa, good morning. You're on
Q100. Hey. Speaking of, like, the Paul McCartney thing, like, my grandma just recently passed away from lung cancer. And she always knew, you know, what was going on, but she didn't know to the final stages that it was cancer. And after she'd went through, you know, tons of chemotherapy and radiation, she basically didn't have any of her life left when she finally realized that, you know, she wasn't going to fight it, that, you know, she had nowhere to go and that she was going to have to live her life out. But she was so, so burnt down from all of the, you know, the treatment that she didn't have any life left in her to share with the family.
Hmm.
And I wish that maybe she wouldn't have known, because then she would have been able to, you know, continue out her life and, you know, to spend more time and to be vivacious. But all she had in the back of her mind was, you know, I'm dying. You know, where do I go from here?
Yeah, I guess you'd have to know the person, because it could totally consume you. And then you don't end up living the little time that you have left also, if you're so scared of dying.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you would have to know that person, right? Hey, Megan, good morning. You're on Q100. Hi.
Hi, my grandpa ended up passing away from cancer. He basically had it everywhere. And looking back, I wish that we hadn't told him. My aunts ended up talking him into chemo that he didn't need. I mean, he was 82 when he passed away. He had lived his life to the fullest. And the chemo ended up turning him into a person that we didn't even know. Mm. So his last, you know, few months were with this person that we didn't know, and we definitely, you know, just didn't get to spend any real time with. So looking back, I wish that we hadn't put him through the chemo.
Hmm.
I had tried to talk him out of it, and he was actually, after he figured out what chemo actually was, because he was just completely oblivious, he changed his mind. And my aunt was very selfish and wanted the little time, you know, any time that she could possibly have with him, not knowing what it would put him through. And she talked him back into it, and he ended up going through with it. And only ended up getting like 2 more months out of it with somebody that we didn't know.
Well, I mean, that's the Ann's fault. Like, I think that he, with the knowledge, I mean, I know. I mean, that's where, yeah, I think that, you know, it depends on the person, depends on the family, because in some cases, if you don't tell them, then they don't go through the treatment and then it ends. But then if you do tell them, sometimes that person will make the choice. Look, this is how I choose to handle it. I'm not going to have the treatment and I'm going to have those final conversations. And I do think that those final conversations are important.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Stacy.
Hey, Brett, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I am a breast cancer survivor. I was 30 years old when I was diagnosed. And when I was diagnosed, I wanted to do everything I could to be with my kids and see people I haven't seen. And obviously, I'm still here, but my whole attitude changed.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I would be very upset if someone kept that from me, because there were so many things that I did afterwards, after finding out, that I probably wouldn't have done, you know, just mm-hmm. procrastinating, working, you know, mm-hmm. just life in general.
But I don't think we're talking about telling you all together. I think that it's the telling when it gets to the very last.
Well, we don't know exactly
the last stages.
Yeah.
This wasn't even the last 30 days, I don't think. My headphones are jacked.
Well, I just think people should know when they're diagnosed. You know, there's things people want to do that maybe they haven't talked about yet.
That's mm-hmm. what I mean. Though, you know when you're diagnosed. I think we're talking about when the doctor pulls maybe the husband in and says, look, we've done chemo for X number of months and radiation and this treatment and that treatment. And at this point, there is nothing left to try.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you want to know that, or do you want to go out with that stress in your mind?
I want to know.
Or you just want to go out, maybe not.
I want to know, because I think I'd have more peace of mind knowing that I got done everything that I could have done in that short amount of time.
Right.
So it would make the process, I think, easier for me. Cindy, good morning. You're on Q100.
Hey, Bert, how you doing?
Okay, thanks.
My stepfather recently passed away back in August, and we kind of think he had an inkling that he had cancer, but the last couple of months, he lost like 40 pounds, and we had no idea that this was going on. And my sister finally had to take him to the doctor, and she called us in and said that he had lost 40 pounds, and he finally called us in and said, I want to see everybody. Well, he told us he never went to the doctor. He never got diagnosed for cancer because he didn't want to know. He always said that if he went to the doctor, he was afraid they were going to tell him he had cancer. So there at the very end, he did take care of everything that he needed to take care of. We kind of think he knew. We never told him for sure that he had cancer. We tell the doctors not to tell him that he had cancer. He always had that last hope that he was going to fight it, he was going to be okay. The night before he passed away, one of the doctors went in and did tell him that he did have cancer. And within 12 hours, he had passed away.
Wow.
Wow.
Until that point, he was fighting it.
Wow. So you think, like, mentally, once he heard it officially from the doctor, he just gave up?
That's it.
Wow. You know, it seems entirely appropriate because we haven't played this at this time of that couple that was married 75 years together.
Yes.
Cool.
And the way they went out together. But this couple, keep in mind as you're listening to it, married 75 years.
100-year-old man was buried this afternoon along with his wife. They were married for 75 years. But as Channel 8's Jim Douglas shows us, that doesn't begin to tell their story, especially the way it ended.
This is Pa's chair. This is Granny's chair.
Separate chairs. That's about as far apart as Pa and Granny ever got.
This is when they got married. They got married on Christmas Day.
Christmas Day, 1932. Miracles would mark the beginning and end of the marriage of J.C. and Josie Cox. They kept their wedding vows 75 years through the deaths of their own children, the lives of three new generations, and inevitable changes in each other. Josie was a talker. J.C. didn't have much to say.
You sit in the chair and you watch TV with him. He'd come in here and get Dr. Pepper. That was his way of socializing with you, was sharing the Dr. Pepper.
The fridge is still loaded with Dr. Pepper. The little Fort Worth house still unchanged.
Yeah, they slept in this bed. They stayed together the whole time.
J.C. was 100. Josie, 96. But she wouldn't let anyone else care for him, right up until they entered a nursing home last month.
She was still ironing clothes 3 weeks ago. Even though he never went anywhere, his clothes were going to be starched. His jeans and his shirt.
Yeah, always.
Always.
Their granddaughters can't help but cry, especially at how it ended. A few days ago, J.C. Cox took Josie's hand and slipped away.
Holding hands. And that's how they died. That's how Paul died. Paul died holding on to Granny.
Just 5 hours later, she let go too, as her family whispered to her.
Your children are waiting for you, and Paul's waiting for you. It's okay, you can let go, and we'll all be okay together. And it, just a minute later, then she passed.
Sometimes the heart just gives out. Maybe sometimes it just gives in.
That's the fourth time I've heard that, and I get goosebumps every single time.
5 hours after.
5 hours.
That's amazing.
I mean, that's why you get married right there. Everybody wants that story right there, because I know Stacy and I have said this to each other, you know, almost in joking, like, I want to go first. No, I want to go first.
No, that's a funny joke.
I can't go first, because if she goes, I'll have no idea how to get through my day. Zero idea. You know, so you, I think we've talked about that, but to go 5 hours, I mean, because that was their existence. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's it. It's just them, married 75 years. The whole world is surrounded just by the focus of their marriage. Mm-hmm. And when one left, the other one took off,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. I think there are plenty of times where someone does have a say-so and when they go. You
I think
know what
so,
I mean?
Too.
And yeah. So she obviously did, and there's other people who do as well.
The Burt Show.
As a parent, I am deeply disturbed and really nervous about this video and the situation behind the video that has been circulating around the internet now for 48 hours. And I'm talking about those cheerleaders that just beat the crap out of another girl outside of Tampa over the last couple of days.
Yeah, and I haven't been able to watch the whole thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's so graphic and so violent that I've only been able to watch bits and pieces of it.
I haven't watched it. I'm too afraid to.
It is, it's disturbing. It's one of those videos that you'll watch, and it's a mood changer for mm-hmm. sure. I didn't put the video up on our main page. I do have I have it linked from my blog online, but I didn't put it on the main page. I don't know. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't feel like it belonged on the main page there. But if you want to see what I'm talking about, you can go to my blog and check it out. But as the details are coming out, here's what goes on. It's a couple of teenagers that are starting to talk all sorts of crap to each other on MySpace. And one of the girls, who apparently is sort of like pretending to be the friend of the victim here, invites her over to her house for a sleepover. So the soon-to-be victim goes over, and when she gets there, there are four or five other girls and two teenage boys outside waiting for her. When she gets in, the videotape starts to roll, and one of the girls specifically just starts knocking this girl around like you can't believe. And the girl won't fight back. She just won't. I mean, she's barely even raising her hands up, but she will not throw a punch. She doesn't even try fighting back. And the images of this one girl hitting her time and time again in the face and connecting with every punch, and then just hitting with rights and lefts on the head and the body, and it's really bad. This girl won't fight back.
Well,
they're even urging her. There's five of them around going, fight back, fight back. She can't. Even if she did, there's five other girls that were going to jump on her.
Well, the beginning of the video, which is, there is no you don't see the beginning of the video, but supposedly what happened is as soon as she walked in, they shoved her into a wall and she actually lost consciousness.
Well, they beat her up pretty badly and she lost consciousness. Then she woke up and they beat her up again.
So
there are five different videos. We've only seen one.
What's filming it?
One of the girls there.
Okay.
And didn't it start as a, like, it wasn't the reason that they were angry at her to begin with, it ended up being bogus? Like, there was a misunderstanding, or?
This is what the parents are saying. The parents of the victim are saying that our girl told us days ago that somebody hacked into her MySpace page. So the trash talking that was going on between these girls wasn't even her daughter. That's what she's saying.
Well, I thought also there was some accusation of somebody either telling on or narking on somebody over something that started that whole hacking into the MySpace to begin with. That ended up, it's just all this weird, I don't know, weird stuff going on.
Either way, I mean, here's some of the details. And let me read right off of the Associated Press. At one point, and again, there are five different videos that were all filmed. We've only seen one.
Mm.
And it was released by the police department. In one, all the girls, you have to understand, are screaming for this one girl to beat her up, you know. At the very end, one girl says there's only 17 seconds left. Make it good. Girl starts wailing on her again. The victim tried to leave. You can see one of the attackers blocking her from leaving. Polk County Sheriff's Office says when the attack was over, three of the suspects forced the victim into a vehicle, took her to another location, and they told her not to call law enforcement or she'd be beaten even worse. Talissa and Patrick say their daughter's now having nightmares, doesn't want to go back to high school. They say that, of course, that she may never get over this. The six girls accused in the beating are between the ages of 14 and 17. Two guys, 16 and 18, were being lookouts during the beating, just in case somebody pulled up to the door. Her parents say they're worried about permanent damage now to her ear and her eye. Let's see. The attackers say they were upset by the trash talking and they wanted to post this video up on MySpace just to let everybody know what happens when you start talking all sorts of crap on MySpace. The sheriff said the victim was first beaten unconscious in a bedroom. When she awoke, she was on a couch in the living room where the screaming and beatings continued. The sheriff said it's one of the most disturbing videos he's ever seen in a long time. The girls face charges now ranging from felony battery to false imprisonment to kidnapping. And I'm not exactly sure even where to take this thing, but I know as a parent, like specifically for me, first of all, if I'm watching this and it's my kid taking the brunt of this abuse, I'm not exactly sure how I could control myself.
The freaky part is they beat her into unconsciousness, which you would think like, hey, let's bring her over to the house and beat her up. But then you wouldn't expect anything to go wrong, like her blacking out. But when she does, instead of going, holy crap, like wow. You know, because I could see kids making that bad decision, like, let's bring her over and punish her. But then once somebody seriously gets hurt, they don't. They drag her into another room and sit and wait for her to wake up.
And there's five of them. There's five of them. And nobody had the sense at all to say, all right, this is enough. Enough is enough. Not one of them. They were all encouraging her. Here's my angle on it. And this may just be specific to me and it may be a little bit misguided, but I've got a five-year-old that is just, he's the sweetest little kid. I mean, he does not have an aggressive bone in his body, not one. And I'm watching this girl just get bullied around and beat up. And me and his mom had this debate all the time. She doesn't want to teach him at all. The lesson she wants to teach our five-year-old is that there is never a time when you should throw a punch. You should never get violent. And I'm not in that camp at all. I'm like, there is a time where sometimes you have to physically stand up for yourself, or sometimes it just comes to blows. You don't want it to, but as a last resort, if nothing else is working, you got to defend yourself. And this is a little kid. My guy's undersized, and I know what it's like to grow up undersized. When kids don't know you, they tend to pick on you. It's a little bit of like the survival of the fittest, and the little guy gets picked on quite a bit.
Especially between boys.
Especially with boys. And if you're not a good athlete or you're not funny or something like that, then you're going to have your share of run-ins. And I guess my question to the Burt Show parenting community is, because we've already attacked the whole what do you do if your child gets bullied thing. We've talked about that a whole bunch of different times. What I'd like to know is what you're teaching your kids to make sure this doesn't happen to them. Because I'm nervous. I'm really nervous. Like, this girl never defended herself.
And well, I think like what Jeff said, she physically might not have been able to by the point it was recording.
It's sure possible.
You know, if she had already been blacked out, like maybe she tried to fight back at first before they started taping it.
Supposedly the first video is when, like, the minute she walks in to the house, they all gather around her and start screaming, you know, and then she runs, like, not knowing where to go. She runs, starts to run, and one of them pushes her. And you know when you go through a doorway, like the frame of the doorway is like that solid wood, like drywall. You know, your house is drywall, but then there's that solid wood frame. And she cracked her head right on there and went down.
Yeah, I mean, it's really bad.
And was within a few minutes of coming in the house. And they all laughed, supposedly.
So my question here, it's a real fine line that I guess I'm asking for a little advice on. Like, how do you teach your child? Because the messages for children, they're very black and white at 5.5, 6 years old or whatever. And it's a mixed message that you're sending them, that violence is bad. However, sometimes you have to resort to defending yourself and getting physical with somebody else. So I want to know what you guys are telling your kids, because I have no idea how to approach it with mine.
Mm-hmm.
And Stacey and I just are not on the same page with this. We just aren't.
Yeah, I think in my house it was more of don't start the fight, but be sure and finish it. You know, that you have to, in my household, it was taught that you you know, that, yeah, if that happens, that you have to defend yourself because that's the only way you can gain respect within that situation. That we were not a very pacifist household.
Doesn't sound like it.
No.
Before I take the calls on this, I just want to play you the mother of the girl that is doing most of the attacking. She was on the Today Show yesterday.
What about the actual beating on tape? Do you think this has been overblown?
I didn't say that. Mercedes, my daughter, warned this girl before she came into the house. The two girls that you have been running your mouth about over MySpace and threatening are in the house. Please do not go in the house. She told her, and there's an eyewitness right next door, an adult that actually heard my daughter tell this girl, please do not go in the house.
So you're saying as the police have characterized this, your daughter lured this young lady, the victim, to this house so that the beating could occur. You say that's absolutely not true.
No, it's not.
And so,
it's not true.
And so how many times during this 30-minute beating, Ms. Garcia, did your daughter call the police to get this to stop?
No, you are correct there. She did not call the police.
So she said.
I'm ashamed of that.
So what role did she play in that house once the beating occurred? Did she throw punches? Did she videotape part of this?
Absolutely not. She did not hit the girl. There were two girls actually involved with the hitting of this girl, and it was one at a time.
Yeah, maybe I'm a hardliner here, but if you're in that house and you're not doing anything about it, you're just as bad as the person throwing the punches.
Agreed.
Good morning, Q100.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the Voice Disguiser.
Great. I wanted to make a comment. I have a son. He's now 10. However, when he was smaller, he was very sweet, very nice, very caring. And I thought that, you know, my husband wanted to teach him self-defense and teach him fighting, but he was very small. He was born prematurely, and you know, I wouldn't let him do it, so I told him, well, there's never a time to fight. And however, when he went to school, you know, of course he was bullied and picked on and all of these things, and I still said, well, you know, you don't fight, you tell the teacher. And one day my son, when he was in kindergarten, he actually got cornered in the bathroom at school, and this is a private school, and the kid slapped him around and broke his glasses and you know, and he wouldn't fight back. And even the teacher said he wouldn't fight back. He, you know, he wouldn't do anything. However, now, you know, we have him in karate class and things, you know, and things of that nature. So I think that you have to talk with them and tell them when it's appropriate to defend themselves.
Yeah.
Because kids are vicious. I mean, and this was in kindergarten.
They really are.
Kindergarten.
And yeah. It's girls, too, y'all. I mean, we have some friends that were sending.
Girls might be worse.
She was in elementary. Their daughter is in elementary school, and when she started elementary school, they said that she was this vibrant, really bright, just this like light that walked in the room. And she got picked on so much at school, physically and verbally, that they had to take her out of the school and send her to a boarding school because she wasn't the same person by the time she was done.
With 1 year of school,
it was like 1 or 2 years of school. Yeah,
really,
it was that bad.
I think girls are probably more, I don't know, at such a young age, but I would say girls are probably more vicious than guys. Like, I think guys are the ones who will push you down and not get, you know, stuff you in the lockers and everybody, it's like bullying.
More physical bullying, but the girls is more social.
Yeah, and I think it's like, all right, you know what? Here's the deal. Jen did something wrong and we're all mad at her, so nobody even talked to her. And when she comes and sits down at lunch today, everybody get up and leave the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's crap. It's traumatic.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Traumatic. I don't know why I said it so. Dramatic.
So my question really is, what are you teaching your kids as far as defending themselves? Are you telling them, look, throw the first punch before somebody throws it at you? Are you saying, let them throw it first? What do you do? Good morning, Q100.
Yeah.
Hello?
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 Hi.
Hey, Bert. Hey, you guys.
Good morning.
Hey.
You're dead on as far as when you're talking about guys and if they're athletes or, you know, they got a humorous side to them, they don't get picked on. That's dead on throughout, you know, middle school, high school. But, yeah, for kids, they got to learn how to defend themselves. I got a 4-year-old, and, you know, if a kid puts his hands on him, I tell him to defend himself. If you're physically threatened in some way, you've got to defend yourself, but also not only to be on the offensive when you're being disrespected, but also when you see it happening to other kids, defend them as well.
And what way would you tell them to defend other kids?
Well, if you see someone going after another kid physically, step in.
You got to break that up.
Mm-hmm.
Break it up. because, you know, maybe that child that's being threatened doesn't yet know the skills or know what to do. But if I'm teaching you early how to defend yourself, I expect you to do the same for others as well if you see that occurring.
That's so, the only fight I ever got into. It was in the seventh grade. There was this girl who was significantly like taller and bigger than another girl in our class, and it was like art class. We were outside working on some sort of project, and she was bullying this girl in my class and was, you know, started to physically push her around and that sort of thing. And I sort of jumped in on it, mm-hmm. and it was the only physical altercation I've ever had in my life. But it was in the seventh grade, and she was pushing me around, and she slapped me, and I punched her back, and all this stuff. I mean, it was like this crazy little seventh grade fight. Didn't go very long, but we both got in trouble for it, and I got sent to detention, and I got the exact same punishment that the bully got, mm-hmm. even though I jumped in to defend my friend who was small, mm-hmm. like she was, you know, tiny, skinny, little short girl, and we both got the same punishment or whatever, but my parents weren't mad at me.
I wanted to say about the girls, sometimes it's difficult to know what to teach your girl, because I think it's automatic that you teach a boy that he has to learn to defend himself, he has to be physical on some level, but do you teach a girl the same thing? And I think a lot of people, I mean, based on this video, I mean, do you send your son to karate class, where you sending your daughter to? She needs to go.
Yeah, and we've talked to bouncers before about this. You know, we sort of laughed about it months ago, but generally when women get in fights, it's way nastier than when dudes do. Way nastier. Remember that guy told us that women are throwing each other through
the bar and fights,
bar
and the
fights
clubs and stuff,
and they won't let go, and they won't stop. Like guys, every fight a guy gets into,
he wants to stop.
Unless you're like built like a doll vet or something, 95% of guy fights are the dance waiting for somebody to break it up.
Well, it's like women going psycho on anything. By the time we get to that point, we are all there completely. There's no doubt in our minds that that's where we want to be. And the same with a fight. If we are in a physical altercation, it's something to, built up to get to that point. So that's why we don't care.
So
you know?
True.
Mm-hmm.
So
nails,
true.
Hair, scratching, who cares? We're going to be there, you know?
Last call on this, then we'll move on. But I'm not exactly sure if I should urge you to watch the video or not.
I don't think I can watch it. Even just hearing the audio of it is terrifying.
It really shakes you. Good morning, Q100.
Hey, this is Dr. Mark.
Hi, Dr. Mark.
I have two little boys, and one of them's just about the age of your oldest, and I taught them there to tell the person one time to stop touching them, and after that, they can kick the crap out of them.
I actually like that idea. So you say, look, if you keep pushing me around, I just want to let you know I'm going to push you back, and if he pushes again, then it's game on.
That's right. They stand up tall and tell them, you're not allowed to touch me like that. And if they do, that's it. No holds bar. Go for gold.
I like that language, too, to tell them exactly what to say.
They are not allowed
to
touch me like that. They stand up strong and tall, but, you know, they don't hit back right away because, you know, there is some bullying among little kids that are 5 and 6 and they push each other down. But once that verbal warnings given.
Yeah.
Hey, it's all to the gold.
Boy, I like that. I like that a lot.
Because it's something he could practice with you at home and then be sort of, you know, rehearsed and prepared for it.
There are just some kids, I think, that are better equipped for this situation than others. Like mine, I mean, I already see it. Like, kids taking his toys and it bothers him, but he never says anything. We had a sitter come over one night that brought her kids, and one of the kids was knocking Hayden around one night, and he wouldn't defend himself, you know? I hate to see it. There are just some kids that can and some that you have to sort of force into it.
Mm-hmm. The Burt Show.
Amanda joins us now. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm okay.
So we're thinking we may have to break out the lie detector for you here.
That's what I want.
All right, so are you currently unemployed now?
Yes, I got fired for this reason.
All right, let's go through the history here. What's up?
Okay, well, apparently this guy was caught, you know, pulling a scam over on the company, stealing money through the temp agency. Well, apparently he said this was all my idea because I was blackmailing him because we were having an affair.
Okay.
Okay, I'm confused already. You have to slow down a little bit or give us some of the history on this guy.
Well, let's see. He's been working with our company probably not even 7 months, I would think. And, I mean, we were friends. We've even hung out outside of work, a few people. You know, I pretty much taught him, you know, I had to teach him things at work. And the reason I think he was using me for this is because I was the one who approved our time cards for our department.
Okay.
So, I don't really know. I mean, everything. I just know what was told to me. But like they said, is I'm the one who came up with this plan, you know, and I was going to blackmail him so he didn't, you know, his wife didn't find out or anything like that. So, I mean, I don't know.
Okay, wait a second. You said that you were fired from a company, but you don't know all the details. So what did they say to you?
I know what was being told to me. You know, they told me that he came, well, I guess he was caught, and he told them that I was blackmailing him, so he didn't have to tell his wife. So I came to him with this, you know, plan to put in fake temps in our, you know, in our system and approve their times, and that we would get the money for it, which they found out that he was the one cashing the checks. And but yet he says that when he cashed the checks, that he was giving me all of the cash.
What? So basically,
I'm confused.
You were fired because someone else at work got busted committing fraud, essentially.
Yes.
And dragged you into his mess.
Yes.
In order to make himself look less bad.
Exactly.
And okay, did he get fired as well?
Yes, he did get fired.
He did.
So the details and the specifics aren't that important. The bottom line is, guy creates some drama at work that he used to profit himself.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up costing him his job, and just so he looked less bad in the eyes of his wife and probably his friends and everybody else, he brings in an accomplice. And what you're saying is you are completely innocent. You just did what your boss told you to do.
Yes, exactly. Okay. I had no. If this was going on, I had no idea. I approved time, but I had no idea these people were made up. I never paid attention. My fault is I didn't pick my friends very wisely, and I didn't pay enough attention to, you know, what was going on at work.
So what do you think his motivation was for bringing you into it? Was he trying to save his job and it just didn't work?
Well, I mean, I seriously doubt he was trying to save his job due to the fact, I mean, they had evidence right there in front that he was, you know, in on it also. I seriously think that he used me just because, I mean, I've been there for 6 years. I know everything, you know, pretty much how our system works. Anyone needs to know anything, they come to me.
Well, let me just make sure that, so you got fired for, not because you were the supervisor and you should have caught it and you didn't catch it, so they fired you. You were fired because of the blackmailing of him?
Well, that, and also they did have proof that I was approved in these time cards.
Mm.
So
they do have transactions.
And the reason that you think he dragged you into it is because he was being unfaithful to his wife, and instead of admitting that, he could then say that you created that story in order to blackmail him?
Yes.
Okay.
And I mean, he says that he apparently told them that I wrote him two letters in his mailbox, which I have no idea where his house is. And then he also says that he could get footage of us being in hotel rooms together.
Were you?
No, never. I've never slept with this man. I've never been alone with him except one time when we went out to eat during work hours.
And you said that they have records of you okaying the checks that he was writing. So they could have also fired you because you didn't catch this.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, I understand. That's what I'm not trying to get my job back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand. They have proof that I approved these people's times, which that was my job to do. But, I mean, and, you know, just everything else. I just want to prove that I'm innocent, that I did not sleep with this man, that I was not having an affair, that I did not conjure up this big scheme to, you know, steal money from our company.
So if I call you on the lie detector and it does come out clean, you know, that you're not lying, that this is really the true story, what are you going to do with the information?
Well, I'm going to sue him. I'm taking this. I'm not going to step back and just let him, you know, get away with any of this. Because I know there's going to be a criminal investigation done through the temp agency where he was stealing this money from. And I just want them to know that I didn't have anything to do with it.
Do you think it could help you get your job back?
You know, like I said, I'm not really worried about getting my job back. I mean, yeah, I need a job. Trust me, I definitely need a job. But after all of this, I could never work there again anyway.
You're Scott. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Scott. You're on Q100.
Hey, how you doing? I think she's kind of missing the point here.
Okay.
She didn't get fired because she was blackmailing someone. She got fired because she checked time slips that had false times on them. If that was her job and she didn't do it, they fired her for the right reason.
Yeah, I don't know that you really have a case. I got to tell you, Amanda. I mean, I'll be glad.
That's what I'm saying. I know that. I'm not saying I got fired because I was blackmailing him. I know the reason my company fired me is because they have proof that I approved these transactions. I understand that.
So what you're trying to do is just make sure you just want to clear your name of the affair.
Yes, the affair, and let them know that I had nothing to do with his scheme. That I, because he said it was my idea. He said that I came up with this master plan.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'll be glad to call you on the lie detector. This thing could backfire on you, though. And it was the very same case a couple of weeks ago with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it was a virtual listener that wanted to go on the lie detector to prove her innocence, and it was work-related also. And by the time the lie detector was done with her, it was proven that she was way less than truthful.
Wow. No, I am telling the truth. I did not have an affair with this man.
Okay.
Okay. Well, then I'm sure the lie detector will pick that up. Yeah. I'll be glad to call you today and put you on it if you want. If that'll give you some kind of closure, sure.
Okay, great.
I can totally see why she wants to do it. What a mess.
Yeah. I mean, everybody else in the office is still talking about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they're also saying the real reason for you getting fired is probably taking a back seat in the office because everybody really does believe. Because
there's a scandal.
That you are, right.
Right. Because
there's a scandal and you are having the affair. So at least you'll get that kind of closure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, let me put you on hold. I just get nervous with those things because they can backfire, man. Yeah. We had it happen just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that last time, what was her percentage of when she was telling the truth? Like 40% truthful?
It was 46%, yeah, which means she was lying most of the time.
The Burt Show.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com, SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.